I would like to extend my thanks to the audience and also the organizers, the staff members at the house, especially the curators of the symposium and the two wonderful exhibitions here that I was so privileged to see, David Hyunjin and Ansem. And it's been a great inspiration to hear the talks and also participate in the discussions thus far. And I'm very grateful to share this research with you tonight. On August 14, 1981, two dozen artists camped out on the dry riverbed of Geum River near Gongju, a provincial city 130 kilometers away from Seoul. This six-day and five-night ritual was called 사계절 연구회, Four Seasons Study. And the group gave themselves a collective name, Yatu, a composite of two Sino characters, Ya, the field, and Tu, to throw, which can together mean to throw oneself to the wilderness. Where no other human presence was to be seen, these artists worked individually, each producing temporary sculptures and performances. With the intention of disregarding conventional divisions of artistic mediums, the artists categorize their works as 야외 현장 미술, or outdoor on-the-site art, conceived as a counterpart of painting and other mediums presented in art galleries. Titled My Work and the Work of Rain and Wind, Shin Hyun-tae's work has a two-part process that embraces the very disintegration of work. Descriptive texts written in the catalog under the title 상황 해설, interpretive explanation of situations, are rather like event scores. Dig in the dry riverbed the shapes of a circle, a rectangle, and a triangle, and build with the extricated sand three-dimensional objects in the same or changed shapes. The carved part, the finely smoothed part, and the three-dimensional objects soon acquire cracks and return to the original state of nature. Sculpting sand mounds in geometric shapes constitutes the artist's production of sculptures, but that does not make up the most important part of the piece. The artist is to wait until the wind and gravity as active agents brittle the mounds, returning the sand to its original state, and making the artistic labor mute, or at least an event with ephemerality. Shin's sculpture, or outdoor on-the-site art, thus engages not only with the natural, untamed material retreat from the riverscape, but also with the temporality with which the riverside environment returns to its equilibrium after a temporary intervention exercised by the human hand. Regardless of the degrees of their intervention into the environment, most task-oriented performances and practiced by early Yatu, that is from early to mid 1980s, did not follow a preconceived action plan with articulated intentions, as the artist supposedly arrived at the site without much premeditation, and the explanation of situation were written after the fact. The exception was an inaugural retreat where several artists did bring along materials like vinyl tubes, as in the case of Ko Seung-hyun, but gradually more participants arrived less prepared. Ko filled the two ends of the tube with sand, thus making them anchor the middle section that is left empty to float in the air and make visible the movement of the wind. It is the wind that has the last word in the shape of the work, co-authored between the artist and the flow of air. To reveal the force of nature is to diminish the human presence within it, seeing the human body within the environment. If transiency and impermanence are important traits in Yatu's early works, then the ideas for art making are as impromptu as the sculptural works are ephemeral. Im Dong-sik's Towards the Grass, in Im Dong-sik's Towards the Grass, the artist walks around a field of reeds after surrounding his body with the collected straws, seeking to erase the boundaries between what demarcates the body and its natural surroundings. Born in 1945 and graduate from Hongik University's art school, Im Dong-sik is Yatu's mastermind and eldest member. And he crafted the 4-paragraph-long founding manifesto, which stated the group's initial objectives and agenda in concise terms. Yatui is a study group, 연구회, and we research the prospects of outdoor art shaped by a fresh touch with nature. With our strong love for nature, we praise this natural change, infinite breadth and thickness, and all its vitality within. Accompanying pure nature and working towards making art that is transparent, we will hold a study session each season, publish catalogs, broaden the range of our perception, and state new methods. Here, a fresh touch with nature refers to a tangible physical encounter with elements of nature, during which the properties designated as virtues of nature, like purity and transparency, are believed to rub off on the artist's consciousness, and to help them envision new methods of art making. Although the fullness of tactile and sensual encounters with nature made available to the artists and implicated in the term a fresh touch cannot be accessed by the readers of the catalog, the black and white photographs of most of the productions demonstrate how each work is marked as a distinct event worthy of individualized documentation, despite or because no installation on the riverbed is permanently preserved for posterity. Not a single photograph captures multiple works together, making it difficult to trace the spatial or temporal relationships among the works. But the textual descriptions highlight how each discrete work is contingent on the temporal stages and passage of time that belongs not to the artist, but to the rhythm of nature. The idea of research nature during Yatui's 4-season study is to experience and respond with the bodily sensorial system to an element of physicality of the particular natural environment, while being fully aware of the shifting nature of those physical traits. The subject of our work, they say, as noted in the founding manifesto, includes, and I quote, the trembling of grass, the sound of grasshoppers, coral of frogs, the sound of wind rubbing against the grains of a tree trunk, the light of stars in night sky, spring flowers, summer fever, the high sky of autumn, and ice-cool temperature of winter, end quote. Yatui's consideration of the tactility of mass, weight, light, sound, and temperature, which is as discrete as dispersed, recalls art historian Amanda Bosquet's recent formulation of earth art and the ethics therein. For Bosquet's, earth art is invested in elements of earth that are in the simultaneous state of perpetuity and transition, and thus manifests, and I quote, how the use of elementals awakens a sense of human world in relationship to the earth's ineluctable presence, end quote. Such an awareness of ethical coexistence is highlighted by its differentiation from land art, which mostly marks the surface of land as property with inscriptions in its sole consideration of earth as, and I quote, merely a textual archive of human history and events, end quote. Indeed, Yatui's gentle, modest, and playful gesture would have been seen in opposition to the violent, masculine, frontier mentality of 1960s America's large-scale land art. Think of Michael Heiser, Robert Smithson, and Nancy Holzer, which another art historian terms as aesthetic affronts to the earth. In the earth art versus land art dyad, most works from Yatui in their formal engagement with earth and nature resemble English counterparts like Richard Long and Andy Goldsworth, who, as art historian Terry Smith puts it, touch the earth lightly. In the beginning, Yatui's understanding of nature was a multi-sensorial recognition of the elements of nature. It was open to visual, tactile, oral, and other perceptions of those who share the space, including but not exclusively reserved for humans. And yet, the discursive binary with which to divide post-war outdoor art practices and non-urban natural environments into good or bad environmental art is a common but faulty assumption made only by a retroactive application of the current time lens of sustainability and environmentalism, as many art historians, including James Nesbitt, has argued. As importantly, An evaluation, according to the intention of the part of Yatu, is often done at the expense of the specific geopolitical, national, and local contexts that have informed the formal qualities, conceptual frameworks, and institutional structures of Yatu's activities. While the elements of nature, like trees, rivers, and etc., seem to go beyond and above and beyond socio-political specificities of the location, a consideration of environmental art within the specific art scene, national, regional, or local, is important because artists respond to such conditions and they are informed by the particular signification that working with such natural elements might project in the specific time and place. While my initial motivation to trace an instance of ecological thinking in South Korean art practice brought me to Yatu about 3 years ago, a further inquiry into the group led me to reorient my research to investigate the group's relative obscurity in the national historiography of art in South Korea, despite the group's longevity and course of expansion. To note briefly here, Yatu would continue the four-season study along the Kum River and other natural environments across South Korea for more than a decade, while the collective's goal and consequent actions underwent shifts and expansions. As early as 1983, Yatu began to call their activity as constituting nature art, or 자연미술, a neologism by which the group sought to conceptualize a relationship between art and nature based on proximity and affinity. In the 1990s, discussions of sustainability and environmentalism began to appear in artist statements, as Yatu began to hold international festivals that brought artists from parts of Asia, Europe, and the Americas to make art along the Kum River. Yatu is still active today, boasting participation from many of its founding members who host the Kumgang Nature Biennial, launched in 2004, and who makes works in spirit of what TJ Demos would problematize as retroactive practices of eco-aesthetics. One may pause here and ask then, if Yatu's mostly performance-oriented and installation-based nature art, 자연미술, remain elided within the art history of South Korea, what are the reasons for such an elision? And what do they tell us about the boundaries defining contemporary art and radicalism in South Korean national art history? My research led me to believe that Yatu remained in discursive obscurity mostly because the hegemony in South Korean art history was sustained by the two dominant narratives of modern art, whose diametric opposition monopolized discursive capital since the late 1970s, if not earlier. Put in the most general terms, one of these two so-called camps is largely referred to as monochrome, 단색조, or 단색화, the Korean monochrome paintings whose formal and material experimentations on canvas and paper were fomented in the early to mid-1970s, and which, from its inception, acquired international recognition, especially in Korea's former colonizer, Japan, as embodying a proclivity to something inherently Korean or Eastern in its non-artificiality and naturalism. The other is Minjung art, or the People's Art Movement, which aligned itself with the 1980s social movement for democracy and decolonization, often with a nativist outlook and for a domestic audience, and a defined position against the institutional hegemony that supported monochrome abstract painting in the market and the academia. While my current book manuscript focuses on Minjung art movement and its participating artists who constructed a powerful anti-establishment narrative against the language of abstract painting, I'm also well aware that these two opposite camps were involved with and to a certain extent perpetuated a particular manifestation of Cold War politics and its divisive logic in the southern half of the Korean Peninsula. And as important for the purpose of this paper is that my research onto Yatu revealed that both camps shared a similarity in their investment in the concept of nature. They both conceptualized their relationship with nature, put certain concepts of nature to artistic employment selectively, and even politicized them, even though an interest in nature, 자연, always conflated with another concept, that is tradition, 전통, native to Korea. Art historian Kim Young-na, for example, has written about the curious similarity between the emphasis on the national identity and tradition in both monochrome abstract paintings and art of social engagement, despite 단색화, the monochrome paintings privileging of Taoism literati scholarly culture, and Minjung art's gravitation towards the commoner's folk aesthetics and shamanism. As ironic as it is, then, the discursive semiotic efforts to connect nature with art in South Korea are at once everywhere and nowhere. Elided institutionally and discursively, the discussions of Yatu effectively touch upon, or maybe slice from an oblique angle, a set of core dilemmas triggered by any critical attempt to recognize nature alongside South Korean art. This elision, or a non-success, turned out to be a radical aperture in a historically constructed relationship between art, nature, and nation in South Korean historiography of art. In other words, my research on Yatu became a fascinating entry point from which to rethink the national art history and to rearticulate the assumptions underpinning such key historical terms as Hyeonjang, the site of dynamic events, 제도, institution, 바깥, outdoors, and 자연, nature, in a wide range of art groups and movements, such as the 1960s and 70s outdoor performances, the 1970s and 1980s abstract 단색화 paintings, and the 1980s socially engaged practices of Minjung art. At least in sharing formal similarities, Yatu can be seen as following a larger wave of performance and outdoor installation which flourished in South Korea in the 1960s and 70s as young artists made attempts to move away from the hegemony of painting, gestural abstraction in the 1960s and the early 1970s, generally called informel, in a nod to French informel. Yatu's de facto leader, Im Dong-sik, took part in this wave at one point by way of the exhibition of young Korean artists, 한국 청년 작가회, in 1975, for which artists based in Seoul held an outdoors exhibition on the Anmyeondo Island in Chungnam province off the Yellow Sea. Im's installation along the sand beach consisted of an ostensibly unorganized spread of 30 egg-shaped sculptures cast in plaster, sized as 70 centimeters in length and 40 centimeters in diameter. It was not long after this event that Im decided to move back to his hometown, Gongju, and immediately began to collaborate with fellow artists from Gongju and the nearby metropolitan city, Daejeon. From 1975 till 1977, Im and two other graduates of Gongju High School and Hongik University worked together as Yadongin, or wilderness group, and their main goal was to return to their native province and rectify the asymmetrical concentration of art scene in the capital. Here, the Sino character Ya, which literally means the outside, the vast field, and the wilderness, immediately strikes as not only a signifier of untamed nature, but also political position of exteriority and anti-establishment, much like how Jaya, to reside in the wilderness, has since the Confucian time connoted a dissent against the regime in power when placed before nouns like intellectuals and movement. For instance, Jang Junhwa was a dissident leader and intellectual standing against Park Jong-hee, a military dictator who ruled South Korea for 18 years as a president until his assassination in 1979. And Jang was called Jaya Daetongnyeong, literally meaning the president residing in the wilderness. It is this widespread use of the character Ya, especially in the midst of the anti-authoritarian and pro-democracy uprisings during the 1960s and 70s, that art critic Kim Jong-il had in mind when he recently interpreted the nature of political manifestation in Yatu and its earlier iteration, Yadongin, as well. If Yatu is about throwing oneself to Ya, as in the field, then it is not only the physical field of sand beds, rocks, and trees that arouse affective response from the artist. It also refers to conceptual site of art making against a hegemonic system developed in the capital from which Gongju and Daejeon-based artists desire to differ. For artists like Im Dong-sik, the affiliation between nature and the topological and geographical marginality carried an equally significant weight as a physicality of natural environment. This point is important precisely because not all outdoor performance art events took the stage of a dry riverbed in the same way. In-depth historical accounts of happening like experimental art that blossomed in the late 1960s and early 1970s Seoul are yet to be written, but it can be stated that in Seoul, both the public space, that is urban streets and parks, and the natural site, that is riverbeds of the Han River, acquired political significance because of these sites' shared ability to provide artists with the possibility of externality to the art establishment. In October 1968, for example, Kangguk-jin, Jeong-gang-ja, and Jeong-chan-sung performed Murder on the Han River as part of what they called happenings usually held in music theaters and streets in Seoul. In the dry riverbed near the second bridge in Seoul, the three artists began by digging holes to bury themselves with only their hands visible above the ground and let the audience and reporters throw a bucket of water onto their heads. Then the artists climbed out of the ground with vinyl banners hanging from their necks on which were written phrases like peddler of culture, advocate of corrupted culture, and acrobat of culture. Conspicuous here is a consideration of the river not as a site of nature, but as an open field, like an urban square, available for the public gathering of intellectuals and cultural players outside the gallery. 2 years later, on August 15th, 1970, the fourth group to which artists Kim Gu-rim, Jeong Gang-ja, and Jeong Chan-sung belonged staged the funeral ceremony of the established art and culture in downtown Seoul in a similar nod to the death and burial that the existing notions of high culture and art. 4 months earlier, on April 11th, 1970, when Kim Gu-rim performed the sensational From Phenomenon to Traces by burning the grass on the slopes leading to the Han River in the shape of triangles, Kim made a reference to the human act of burning the agricultural fields in the spring to eliminate harmful insects, as if to visually contrast the time and space prior to and after the agricultural ritual. The sculptor Lee Seung-taek likewise seemed uninterested in nature as a concept or a site of intervention outside the human life and urban space when he performed in 1971 Wind Folk Amusement, a work widely considered as one of the earliest instances of land art in South Korea alongside Kim Gu-rim's Phenomenon to Traces. Capturing the movement of wind with long red cloth on Jeju Island, known for its steady and strong wind, Lee's work remained firmly as an experimentation within the realm of sculpture making, that is, how the wind sculpted the majestic, free-flowing mass irrespective of the artist's ability to shape its form. When Lee's Wind Folk Amusement was restaged on Seoul's Han Riverside the same year, a documentary film captured a recently erected forest of high-rise apartment buildings in the far distance, as if the materialized wind framed the urban landscape instead of escaping it. For Im Dong-sik in Gongju, however, nature was not simply a way to leave behind the art establishment represented by the white cube and the art market. Nature was also an alternative site beyond the urban public space. In Yatu, we may find an alternative to how public space was understood by many artists at the time as narrowly defined by urbanity. Likewise, if the dichotomy between the white cube and the green field is an opposition that iterations of land art and earthworks in North America and Europe have pushed forward, for Yatu, this opposition reflects an equally potent opposition of 지역, the local that was provincial city of Gongju, versus 중심, the center that was Seoul. Should Yatu be recuperated from its historical obscurity, this reconstruction of art history should begin by recognizing how several discrete understandings of public sphere existed in South Korea's performance-oriented art staged on the riverside. In 1980, 1 year prior to founding Yatu, Im Dong-sik planned an outdoor art festival named Geungang Hyundae Misuljae, the Geum River Contemporary Art Festival, by working with Hong Myung-sup, who originally from Daejeon near Gongju, had been given opportunities as a graduate of the equally venerable Seoul National University to exhibit alongside Seoul-based artists. Through their initiative to gather the artists in the Geum River region, Im Dong-sik and Hong Myung-sup seemed to search a way to think outside the Seoul art scene as much as to recognize the beauty of the local environment. Thus, a consensus among the group to add the river to the festival's title was reached without difficulty. And I quote, "The name of the festival represents our goal to strive for the noble state of beauty, elegance, purity, modesty, and lucid clarity that the river already possesses, and to give our utmost focus on our study," end quote. A total of 30 artists born or currently based at the time in the Gongju and Daejeon region were invited to present works outdoors, and documentary photographs of these outdoor installations demonstrate their resemblance to the modest, minimal intervention into the sand beach that would later emerge in Yatou's activities. Such an activity was understood as an attempt to, and I quote, "perceive the Geum River as a vibrant site of nature." 자연의 현장, in Korean. In its habitual use, the term 현장 is employed in connection with an activity in progress and emphasizes its contingency to the particular site. When used as a gerund, it refers to the state of being on the site and based on reality, and modifies a noun that follows, as in 현장감, or the dynamic sense of being on the site. When used as a noun, it means a vibrant site and can be preceded by an action-based modifier, as in an investigation site, 조사 현장, a construction site, 건설 현장, and a protest site, 데모 현장. Among the activist circles of the anti-authoritarian pro-democracy movement, the concept of 현장 is complex, and it largely referred to the ground of socio-political and cultural reality, one that is shared among the oppressed Korean people, 민족 or 민중, who, as a historical agent, would dispel the oppressive dictatorship to which the society was then subjected. When the assumed proximity to 현장 became increasingly important for the moral and political justification of the pro-democracy movement, student activists were propelled to enter the labor site of the working class, or 노동 현장. Art produced and consumed on the grounds of the protest grounds, protests came to be known by the mid-1980s as 현장 미술, or art on the site art, or art of the vibrant site. And they were mostly in the format of easily reproducible flyers or large format banners made collectively and viewed publicly in political demonstrations. Im's placement of 자연, nature, and 현장, the dynamic site, together in 1980, can therefore make a striking manifesto, a remarkable testament to the perspective that assigns to nature the characteristics of dynamic temporality of ongoing transformation, as if it can be used as a verb. 자연 can be used as a verb. 현장 in Gongju, therefore, points not only to the Gongju-based artist's innovative consideration of nature, nature as a system that coexists with human agency, but also to their coming together with colleagues who imagined a different social order. Furthermore, when nature is summoned as a kind of 현장 within the art-making context, the type of agency that nature gains by becoming a site of action suggests a focus other than human-based matters, such as class politics and decolonizing struggle that occupy self-claimed activist artists of the 1980s democracy movement. The case of Yatou, therefore, provides a fresh commentary on how politics of publicness and public good tended to be defined in the circle of leftist politics in South Korea, or perhaps elsewhere. Already in 1980, when Hong Myung-sup had proposed to use 야외 현장 미술, outdoor on the site art rather than simply 야외 미술, outdoor art, the term 현장 would have pointed to a reality at once metaphysical and concrete, encompassing inanimate as much as human actors of the world. For critic and curator Kim Jong-gil, the 1970s leftist cultural movement's promotion of an indigenous concept of the world and nature continued to flourish in the 1980s, and Yeatu's reverence for nature ought to be seen in light of this broader cultural movement. But for her short paper delivered at the Yeatu organized symposium in 2008, art historian Kim Mi-kyung, for her part, proposes, and I quote, ideological affinity, end quote, between Yeatu's naturalism and the critique of Euro-American modernism that surged in the 1960s and 70s, a critique put forward by Japan-based Korean theorist and artist Liu Fan. That Liu Fan is famous for fomenting theories of monoha, the thing school, in the late 1960s in Japan, and exercising influence over the formation of tansekwa starting in the early 1970s is a well-known historical account. A glimpse into Kim Jong-gil's promotion of nativism in Minjung art and Kim Mi-kyung's encapsulation of the so-called Eastern metaphysics and Eastern aesthetics in tansekwa seems to reveal that Yeatu provides a temporary home for both camps that dominated the critical discourse of contemporary Korean art. A search for an alternative to Western modernity has motivated a substantial part of the resurrected belief in native land, tradition, and ethno-nationalism across nation-states located outside the West. And yet, the case of South Korean art and its relationship with nature is a peculiar one, whose consummate pervasiveness across forms, styles, and ideological affiliations is revealed in the common reading of Yeatu by the two purportedly opposite views of contemporary art in South Korea, that is, Minjung art versus tansekwa, various mediums of visual culture versus the sole medium of painting, figuration versus abstraction, engagement versus arts for art's sake. Of these two opposing views, however, the conceptualization of nature's relationship with art by tansekwa's leading theorist Lee Il, or Il, is more relevant for later Yeatu in the late 80s and 90s, whose continuing legacy and longevity was backed by, or perhaps necessitated, a fundamental shift in the group's conceptual foundation and signifying function of nature from Ya, the wilderness, to Chayon, nature and its non-artificiality and its national and regional affinity of the Eastern ideals. Writing for the 1992 Tate Liverpool exhibition Working with Nature, Traditional Thought, and Contemporary Art from Korea, Lee articulates naturalism as, and I quote, our particular outlook on nature, an ideology akin to pantheism in the metaphysical sense, and is the same as the world of Taoism, end quote. And therefore, different from the Western concept per Descartes, of man's conquest of our nature. On the surface, Lee's naturalism seems to resonate the universal concept of nature promoted by Marxist cultural geographer Neil Smith, which sees both the human and the non-human within the boundaries of nature. Smith opposes it with the external concept, which is crystallized in the Kantian dualism of nature and human, whose externalization of nature serves as the basis of bourgeois ideology of nature, the object of Smith's criticism. While both Lee and Smith seem to agree that nature should not remain as an externalized entity, Lee farther pushes his mandate to designate nature as an entity of the inside. This curious swapping of the inside and the outside has its root in colonial history. Even in the 1970s, when Lee's rhetoric first placed the color white, nature, and Korean nation on the same plane, acrimonious debates around the possible colonial origins of such a practice of equivalence erupted. In the recent historical study of tansekwa, art historian Joan Key charts that in the 1970s, both the supporters and detractors of tansekwa were well aware of the discourse of beauty of sorrow in 1930s Korea under the Japanese colonial rule. Initially developed by Japanese connoisseur Yanagi Muneyoshi, whose folk art, Minge theory, germinated from his admiration of late Joseon Dynasty white porcelains, the concept, beauty of sorrow, located the deep melancholic sorrow of loss and an appreciation for an unpolluted pre-modern state of nature supposedly shared by the Korean people as a representative aesthetics of the Korean Peninsula, the colony, and consequently Asia as a whole, an alternative to the West, as opposed to the modern and industrialized Japan, the metropole. An advanced nation deemed to have lost touch with nature and its Eastern roots. Lee here reverses a Kantian dichotomy of the inside human and the outside nature, and assigns nature an identity defined by other binaries, the East versus West, the indigenous versus foreign, and nationalism versus colonialism. While being accused of adapting Yanagi's colonial rhetoric in post-liberation Korea, Lee thus promoted nature as the inner spirit of Korea against the external influences of modernity and urbanization. For Lee, pan-naturalism was the sole resolution for what he designates as the two quests that persisted in Korea's national art scene. And I quote, to break free from subordination to Western modern art and to find its own place in the context of the international art world, end quote. According to Lee's logic, visibility in the international art scene required by necessity, though reluctantly, a hyper-visibility of the said art's national traits, which for Korean art, that is, Danseka in this case, was the ideology of white and nature. In the seemingly innocuous juxtaposition of nature against industrial society, however, we discover the early 20th century imperial history of the colony versus metropole that is as contentious as the 1970s promotion of Korean art in the so-called international scene is aspirational. The mantra that what is most inside, that is Korean land and nature, can be most visible in the outside, that is the international art scene, had its origin in early 20th century colonial Korea as much as the 1970s. In naturalism, or pan-naturalism, nature seems bound by the paradigm of the nation and even nationalism, while the connection made between nature and a Korean or Asian identity assumes elements of nature as allegories of such an identity. So here rests what I term the politics of nature in South Korea's post-colonial art history, where in any discussion of nature and art, including that of Yatu, is inevitably implicated structurally and epistemologically in the fraught history of colonial politics and the residues of imperial legacy. Thank you.